Now in session is the Reedy Planning Commission special meeting on this Thursday, November 14, 2019, at 5 p.m. Commissioner Custodio, would you lead us in a flag salute, please?
Sure. Please stand.
Face the flag. Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Conrad?
Here.
Commissioner Custodio?
Here.
Commissioner Luzania?
Here.
Commissioner Hudson?
Here.
Chair Perez?
Here. Oh, we've got a full boat today.
Yes, we do.
Awesome.
Good to see.
Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the Commission not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the Community Development Director's Office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the Commission as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment this evening on anything that's not on the agenda? I see none, so I'll close the public comment section. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any commissioner may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change and recommend a course of action, and the commission can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. So number one on the consent agenda, may I have a order to approve?
I move that we approve.
May I have a second?
I'll second.
Call for the question, please.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Conrad?
I abstain because I was not at that meeting.
Commissioner Luzania?
Yes.
Chair Perez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go on to item number two, administrative business. Consideration of 1 year extension of time for vesting tentative subdivision map numbers 6196 through resolution number 2019-10. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission take the following action. A, approve a 1 year extension of time for vesting tentative subdivision map number 6196, a 161-161 lot subdivision located on the northeast corner of Reed Avenue and Aspen Avenue. B, approve a 1 year extension of time for conditional use permit number 2017-7, authorizing the establishment of a planned unit development as part of the vesting tentative subdivision map application number 6196. With that said, I'll turn it over to staff. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair, members of the Planning Commission, Ellen Moore, Associate Planner with the Community Development Department. Vesting tentative subdivision map number 6196, we've commonly referred to it as the Reed Aspen Project because of its location, which is on the northeast corner of Reed Avenue and Aspen Avenue, between the Sun Pacific facilities and an existing residential subdivision to the north and the east. And then across the street to the west is currently agricultural land that's owned by Reedley College. So to give an idea of where that is. On December 14th of 2017, this map, as well as a related conditional use permit, was approved with conditions of approval. Since that time, phase one of the map, which is about 68 of the lots that's on the eastern side of the map, that section was purchased by Self Help Enterprises, and they got final map approval of that phase earlier this year. So they are working towards the public improvement construction and then eventually building the homes of that phase. So this map is still active. It's still being worked on. And the property owner is currently marketing phase two of the development, which is on the eastern side, or excuse me, the western side of the property with an entrance onto Reed Avenue. So that phase is still being marketed with the intent for it to be developed, but the tentative map is expiring on December 14th of 2019. All of our subdivision maps have a two-year time frame with the option to extend the map. So because it's still an active map and the phase two is still being marketed and phase one is still under construction or about to be under construction, the property owner submitted a written request to extend the map for an additional year and to also maintain their vesting rights as part of this as well. So staff is supportive of the project as it was approved in 2017, and staff is supportive of extending the map to continue the development of the map, as well as the related conditional use permit. So with that, staff's recommendation is to approve the one-year extension of time. The new expiration date would be November 14th of 2020. And just to keep in mind that the extension request is just for an extension request this evening. It does not change any conditions of approval or the development of the map as was approved in 2017. With that, that concludes staff's report. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Commissioners, any questions or concerns for staff? I see four shakes, so that means we're ready to proceed.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I will open it up to the public for any public comment on this issue. I see none, so I will close the public comment session. And I ask the commissioners for an order of your wishes. And through the resolution 2019-10, staff recommends that the Planning Commission take the following action, which will approve A and B based on 2019-10. With that, I'll ask for.
I move to approve.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Commissioner Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Conrad?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Luzania?
Yes.
Chair Perez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll go on to number three. Consideration of a one-year extension of time for tentative subdivision map number 6206 through resolution 2019-13. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission take the following action. A, approve a one-year extension of time for tentative subdivision map 6206. A 45-lot subdivision located on the northwest corner of Frankwood Avenue and Olson Avenue.
Thank you, Chair. So this is the project that's commonly known as the Almond Grove Project, and this, like the previous map, is an infill project on Frankwood and Olson Avenue. It's bounded by Shoemake and Serrier Avenue, and it was about a 9-acre property in the middle of an existing residential neighborhood. So it did make sense to approve the 45-lot subdivision for single-family development. And that was also approved on December 14th of 2017. And that is actively being worked on as well. A final map for phase one was approved earlier this year, which was to construct one interior street and I think it was 18 homes on either side of that street. So that is currently being worked on. You can see them framing the houses right now and constructing the block wall along Frankwood. So this project is actively being pursued as well, and the property owner does intend to develop all 45 lots. But an extension of time was requested for this one. So this one was not a vesting map, and technically this map could qualify for an automatic extension because public improvements are already happening. There is a provision in the Subdivision Map Act that does allow an automatic extension if a certain amount of dollars is spent for public improvements. But out of an abundance of caution, staff still did want to bring forward an extension to make sure that the map doesn't expire and the developer can continue to do that. And so, as mentioned in the staff report, there was a verbal conversation with the property owner at that time that the staff report was being written to make sure to just explain the extension request, the out of an abundance of caution that it should move forward, and we did get a written confirmation of that, and that email was placed on the dais before you this evening. So the property owner did provide a written request as required by the code. So with that, staff again is supportive of this project and the continuation of this project. And so staff recommends approving a 1-year extension of time for this map, the tentative subdivision map 6206, which would extend the map expiration date to November 14th of 2020. That concludes staff's report. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Commissioners, questions, concerns for staff? You know what? I did have one question. I hope I highlighted it because I was concerned.
And then while you're looking at that, I did just want to clarify that the similar to the previous item, this is just approving the extension. And so the same conditions of approval, same map layout still does apply.
Well, Mr. Perez is looking for that. Mm-hmm. You mentioned abundance of caution. What mm-hmm. did you mean by that?
Based on the amount of dollar spent towards public improvements, because they did some improvements outside of the limits of their project. They did upsize some sewer lines and storm drain lines to help manage things. I think there were drainage issues with the existing homes near there, so they did upsize lines and repave some of the roads to help. It would benefit their project, but as well as the neighboring houses, because you know to clean up some issues that existing subdivision had. So with that and with the paving of the streets around the subdivision, there is a dollar amount that. If that is spent towards the map development, there could be an automatic extension to the map. But in case that doesn't apply, we did want to still bring forward the extension request, because there's kind of a splitting of hairs as to what the verbiage is, like whether it's the amount spent outside of the project or adjacent to it. So it was a little unclear, so that's why out of an abundance of caution we are here to make sure that there's a extension request.
Add a little more detail to that, commissioners. And the dollar amount is I don't remember it right off the top of my head, but so specific that it's like $161,224.18. I mean, it gets down to something that specific. And because of that language to us, where Ellen and I thought vesting language associated with vesting tentative maps was very specific on this item, it was a little more in the gray area on the non-vesting. And so we simply wanted to make sure that there couldn't be an issue with this, with an active map that was under construction like that, because phase two, they haven't filed their final map for phase two yet. And that's the reason why the recommendation was made to the applicant to move forward with an extension, or to approach them and see if they wanted to do that, to simply make sure that all bases would be covered. Even if the Planning Commission were to take the action to extend the map and we were to find that the exemption, the dollar amount there, did in fact apply to that one, either or could apply to that. So what we're doing tonight is just simply making sure that the map itself would not be in a spot where it could expire, and we could have avoided that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other concerns? I apologize, my question is for item number 4.
Oh, okay.
So with that, I'll open up the public comment session for the public. Are there any questions on any of the issues that we just spoke about? And if not, I will close that. Consideration of a 1-year extension of time for tentative subdivision map number 6206 through the resolution number 2019-13. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission take the following action. A is included in there. So if I can have your wishes.
I so move.
Second?
I'll second.
Call for the question, please.
Commissioner Conrad?
Yes.
Commissioner Luzania?
Yes.
Commissioner Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Chair Perez?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Now we go on to the other fun stuff. Huh?
That's right.
Okay. Item number four is our workshop on farmland preservation program workshop. I look forward to this. So which staff is going to lead this?
You're going to get a little bit of everybody tonight.
All right.
So,
wow. All right.
So that's a good thing. It's an item we're excited to bring forward to you today. I'll try not to touch on too many details as I get into just the introduction here. I'm just going to give the real brief overview of the point of tonight's meeting, tonight's workshop associated with this item. And then Ellen's going to talk a little bit more about some of the logistical background of the reasons why this item is being brought forward, the reason why the city is engaged in this. And then the consultant team is going to lead us in some slides where they're actually going to go through the technical analysis, some of the findings up to this point, and then seek, of course, to get feedback from the Planning Commission and from those attending the workshop tonight as we continue to move forward with this program. So first, just to give the brief overview of the presentation we'll be doing, introduction is where we are right now. We're then going to talk about what the tasks are associated with the program, where we are within the schedule for the actual program, what findings we have up to this point, what findings we're still looking for or asking for feedback on. We will utilize a polling exercise to do that, so you get some real-time results when you go through some of those questions. It's a fun, engaging item for us to do. Then we're going to talk about what the next steps are, additional public outreach, what you can expect through the rest of the process, what the rest of the timeline looks like, and when we anticipate that a program would be brought forward to the Planning Commission for recommendation and then ultimate approval with the Planning Commission. And then, of course, as always, we will field any questions and touch on those items there. So what really is the city's overall goal with the farmland preservation program? And these three bullet points right here really emphasize what we're hoping to be able to get out of this. Ellen's going to dig a little bit more into the details of why we're doing this, but I wanted to touch on the items right here. First and foremost, to preserve agricultural activities. In the city of Reedley, we all know how vital the ag economy is to everything that we do, to everything from the very identity of the city, all the way down to each one of us on our individual lives. And so it's to make sure that we are being responsible in the way that we are preserving those activities and acknowledging those activities. It's also to do that by minimizing the impact of urban development on agriculture. So you'll hear the term, interface a lot when you're talking about the urban interface between agricultural activities and what that means. It's to make sure that when you do have that interfacing taking place, that you're minimizing the impact of how those two interface with each other. And of course, to continually enhance Reedley's unique small city character. That's something I think that the majority of citizens here are very proud of Reedley, and they love the small city character that Reedley continues to maintain. We want to be able to be the type of city that provides great world-class amenities, but does it in that small town type of feel, right? In a place where you feel you want to have your families. This is where you want your children to grow up. Your grandchildren are safe here. All those type of items. So it's also to make sure that we're continually enhancing that and really calling out the uniqueness of that. One of the items that I would point to here is this type of program is actually unique. You would think that in the San Joaquin Valley, being the number one agricultural region in the entire world, you would think that you would see these type of programs all over the place. You don't, actually. You will see a good amount of farmers that may engage with them through various trusts or land entitlements, but not a lot of local agencies really interface with this. And Ellen's going to talk about here in the next couple of slides the reason why the city is going to be engaged in this one and exactly what that's going to look like for us.
We've been using Reedley's unique small city character since we were a population of 7,000 and 8,000, mm-hmm. and it's still that way at 25, approaching 26 maybe. Mm-hmm. But that is still so true, mm-hmm. even with the growth mm-hmm. that's come before us.
Right. And speaking of growth, the Farmland Preservation Program came about because it's called out in the Reedley 2030 General Plan. And to summarize quickly, the General Plan does show future growth of a community up to a certain year. In this case, it is 2030. I'm going to jump forward here really quick to just show the jurisdictional boundaries that the city has now. And so the black dash line does show the existing city limits, and then the Reedley sphere of influence is in the green shaded areas, which I'll touch on in a little bit. But because general plans show future growth, that is assumed to be urban development, either residential or commercial development, that does impact farmland. And especially in Reedley, because we are surrounded by it. So in order to help mitigate that, the general plan does call for goals and policies that help with growth management. For example, to encourage infill development first before annexing property in, and not annexing property in until there is hardly any land left to develop within the city limits. I believe we have an 80%. Threshold there before we can even look or consider additional annexations, which we're at 90% right now, if I would add. So you will see more growth and more expansion of our boundaries because we're kind of running out of room at this point. So as part of the Reedley General Plan 2030, we are required to do an environmental impact report, assess the impacts of future development. And obviously, outward growth in Reedley will impact prime farmland, and it is a finite and irreplaceable resource. So that's why the Farmland Preservation Program was included as mitigation. And another question asked is why now? Because in the general plan, we did actually put a cap on how much land we could annex before we had to implement a farmland preservation program, so that we weren't just saying, oh, we'll do this eventually within the growth area. We actually did put a cap on how much we could annex before moving forward with this program. And so in addition to that, as Rob touched on, farmland is incredibly important to this community. And Fresno County agricultural products were valued at $7.8 billion in 2018. So Reedley is linked financially and culturally to farmland production. So it's very important for it to be preserved and strike that balance between developing our general plan and growing outside of our city limits, but also being mindful of the farmland that could be consumed as a result of that. So again, to touch on the differences in colors here, we have a dark green area, which is our LAFCO-approved sphere of influence. LAFCO stands for Local Area Formation Commission. So if there's any annexations that the city does, we do go through the LAFCO approval process, and we also contact Fresno County to do so. So the darker green color does show our existing sphere of influence. So this is where we're anticipated to grow first. And obviously the goal is to annex in land that is next to the Reedley city limits, and preferably surrounded but on more than one or two sides by the Reedley city limits. And something that Reedley did that was unique was we also identified the lighter green shaded area, which is the city-approved sphere of influence. So that is expanded a little bit farther out, and that was also identified in our general plan EIR. So we did assess the impacts of potentially developing all the way out to the light green area. Are we planning on growing out that much by 2030? Probably not. It will be, it's highly unlikely, because Reedley has grown very conservatively because of that mindfulness of agricultural land conversion. But in case we did expand the city approved sphere out, and so we did analyze those impacts, which did lead to the mitigation measure of a farmland preservation program development. And this map does show our current general plan update and shows the existing sphere. It does include all of the land uses identified within the existing sphere. So what is involved with developing a farmland preservation program? We wanted to identify other farmland preservation programs to see what other local agencies have implemented and whether it works for them or not. And what's also interesting is identifying the ratio of acreage to preserve versus what is developed or the size of what's developed. The next is to collect local farmland, other land use, and demographic data for property nearby to see which land is more productive or which pieces of land would be ideal for potential easements or conservation. And next, identify program goals and policies, and then develop a farmland preservation implementation program to provide specific examples of how to carry out those goals and policies. Conduct public outreach, which is what we are starting this evening and what we will continue to do throughout this program. And then finally, to prepare the administrative draft and final program. And with that, I'll hand it over to Georgina Vivian to discuss these tasks.
And before Georgina gets started, I just wanted to emphasize on the last slide there, even though they are numbered, you have, you know, your tasks 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, or 1 through 6, excuse me. It's important to note that all of those are, of course, happening concurrently. In order to have any type of good program, you want to have public outreach going from beginning all the way through the end. You're going to be collecting and analyzing data all the way from beginning to end, identifying other programs that there might be all the way from beginning to end. So we have a great consultant that we have brought on board for this program here. We're very, very excited to be working with VRPA and their team. And they are excellent at making sure that all of these bases are being covered concurrently.
Thank you so much, Rob. Good evening.
Good evening.
So the next step in this process, one of the first tasks that we undertook was to look at other farmland preservation programs around the state. And in the process of doing that, we wanted to make sure that we understood exactly what the city was looking for. And so, as others have mentioned, Ellen and Rob, farmland is irreplaceable. It's an irreplaceable resource. And one of the city's goals is to preserve that farmland as much as possible. Agriculture, as Rob mentioned, is also very important to not only Reedley's economy, but to the regional economy and the statewide economy. We can basically say that the San Joaquin Valley is the ag capital of the world, and I'm sure all of us want to make sure that it stays that way. and Rob also mentioned the urban ag interface. So urban uses adjacent to farmland can lead to conflicts. We know what those are. We've got agricultural operations that in some cases take place directly across the street from residential development. And so we need to look at those conflicts and how to mitigate those. So in this case, the city is making every effort it can to guide development, at the same time preserving ag land and preserving the character of Reedley. So there are a number of different implementation strategies that can be looked at. One is to enact a right to farm ordinance, which maintains the farm and keeps it intact so that the agricultural use is preserved over time. To encourage the use of Williamson Act contracts, that's already a process, of course, that's in play. So to keep that process going, and that keeps an agricultural operation or a property in a contract to maintain that agricultural use for at least a 10-year period. To require at a minimum a one-to-one mitigation. So if a new development comes in and they they're developing 10 acres, then we're looking for that development to accommodate the preservation of 10 acres elsewhere. And that elsewhere would be within Fresno County. So that's what we're looking at now. That's the assumption that we're moving forward with. But through this process, you may want to look at something different than a one-to-one ratio. So that the one-to-one ratio, or that acre of equal or greater quality farmland, would be protected for sphere of influence changes, it would be protected for zoning changes, and it would be protected for any other discretionary action that may be taken by the Planning Commission and the Council. Yes.
Is the Williamson Act still being offered to farmers?
Yes. It's still in play.
Still in play.
Yes. So protection can also be achieved by the acquisition or dedication of agricultural land. We were talking before the meeting tonight, there is a local major farming operation to the north of Reedley that does provide land for preservation purposes. And right now it's being used by a number of other developments around the state, not so much locally, but where there are other preservation programs, they are working with that property to preserve that land in where they're having impacts on ag properties. So the development rights and or payment of in-lieu fees is also another mechanism. So instead of providing for that one-to-one ratio, they would pay into a fee program, and that would go to purchase ag land elsewhere so that the land is preserved. So allowing the payment of in-lieu fees would be an option. They would fully fund the acquisition and stewardship of that agricultural conservation easement. And then an entity also has the legal and technical ability to hold and administer the agricultural preservation easements and the in-lieu fees. So that could be accommodated through this process. We also looked at what other farmland preservation programs similar to what we want to do here in Reedley are, where they are around the state and what their requirements are. In Yolo County, they require to protect their, or can they require to projects that convert prime farmland to preserve 3 acres per 1 acre converted. So it's a 3-to-1 ratio. City of Davis requires a 2-to-1 mitigation ratio. The city of Houston in Stanislaus County, just up the road, they require 2-to-1. And the city of Reedley, as I mentioned before, we're proposing a 1-to-1. So we're looking at something that's conservative, something that, but at the same time will preserve the agricultural character of this community and within the general plan area. So with that, I'll turn it over to our sub-consultant, Sarah Allender with Provo and Pritchard.
Thanks, Georgina. Good evening. I'm going to run through some of the data that we have collected so far as part of this process. We have a series of maps to share, and as Rob pointed out, we've collected the data, but that doesn't mean that we've mapped it and we're done. There will be an analysis process because for every map that you see, there is a whole set of data that lies behind it, right? So part of the reason that we chose the data in the mapping that we did is because in some way is going to help influence how we set up this program and some of the decisions that need to be made as part of this process. And when we look at the data that got collected, it essentially falls into two different buckets. The first is data that relates to how farmland currently exists, how it's mapped, how it's currently preserved in the area. You mentioned Williamson Act contracts. We actually have a map of that, so we'll see where those properties are right now within the study area that are under those contracts. But we also looked at things like existing crop types and then also looked at how farmland has changed over time, and we'll have a map that demonstrates that as well. The other bucket is really related to economic and demographic data, really focused on land use. We've already looked at the planned land use. That's, of course, a driver in how land is developed in the area. But we have some maps that look at land use patterns and some of the existing land uses that are on the ground right now. And again, how those have changed over time. So the first map is the Williamson Act parcel land. Georgina mentioned that these are contracts that allow private landowners to set specific parcels aside for agricultural conservation. So they are limited in the types of activities that they can do on these parcels. These are 10-year rolling contracts, meaning if you don't do, you enter into a 10-year contract, and if you don't do anything, then it automatically renews for another 10 years in the following year. So it just continually renews on a 10-year timeline basis. Most of the parcels in there in that sort of lighter yellow shade are where we would expect to see them. You don't really need to expect to see them within the city limits. You'll see some within spheres of influence, but most of them are really located outside of the sphere of influence, and that's where we would expect to see them. And probably about a little over a quarter of the acreage that's located outside of the LAFCO approved sphere of influence is under some sort of Williamson Act contract right now.
I have a question. The red dotted line to the north, is that Adams Avenue?
That's a great question. Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob and Ellen. So we also wanted to understand, because these are rolling 10-year contracts, you can get out of them. And you do that through a process called non-renewal. So you can file for a non-renewal, and that essentially stops at 10-year clock. So there are two parcels that we identified that currently have a non-renewal filed on them. They're the blue parcels. So I don't know if the laser will go that far, but they're located in the southwest portion of the study area. And that means that those parcels are going to come out of the Williamson Act contract any time between 1 and 9 years from now, depending on when that non-renewal was filed.
And if you want to get out of the Williamson Act contract altogether, it takes a set of findings through the county, through the LAFCO. Is it LAFCO or through the county? I think the county, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not solely up to the property owner then. They must meet some conditions, is that what you're saying?
There's...
Yeah, if you have not filed for non-renewal and you want to then develop your property, you have to go to the county and receive approval. The county board of supervisors has to make findings regarding that, regarding the desire to pull that out of the Williamson Act.
If you didn't file for non-renewal.
Yeah.
So if a property owner wants to develop their property somewhere over the next 10-year period, then they can file for a non-renewal, and there isn't any criteria that they have to enter into for that. It's just simply whether or not they elect as the owner to file for that. If they have not filed for that and they're interested in developing their property, there is a set of criteria that they have to meet that the County Board of Supervisors findings they have to make.
Yes, you can advance the timeline, but it will also cost you.
Yeah.
Because one of the benefits of being in Williamson Act is you get taxed at a lower valuation. So if you want to get out prior to the non-renewal or the contract running out on its own, then you basically get to pay more in taxes to do that. But there is a process. So the next couple of maps, we really wanted to look at soil characteristics. Soils have, you know, a lot to do with how agricultural cultivation occurs on a property. And the first one we selected was the Story Index. And the Story Index looks at four different characteristics of soil. And then it does a lot of calculations in the background and results in a classification. And there's six categories. Everything from the green means it's good for ag production, all the way down to the red means not so good. So if it's any of the shades of green and purple, those are good to fair. If it's the orange or either of those reddish colors, then that means it's not all that great. From a Story Index perspective, for the characteristics that they're looking at specifically from an agricultural cultivation perspective. It gets interesting too when you start comparing soil index ratings, because the next map is another soil index characteristic map. This is SAGB, so Soil Agriculture Groundwater Banking Index. It looks at a number of factors. There's five different factors, but this one sort of layers on the ability of the soil to recharge as well. And again, there's some calculations involved, but it spits out some categories and classifies the land. Six categories, again, green is better, red is not. So you start to see some patterns in the study area and how soils are laid out. The next map that we looked at and mapped is the Farmland Mapping and Monitoring Program. This is a program that is managed by the Department of Conservation. They're the same department that manages the Williamson Act contract program. But the FMMP, the Farmland Mapping and Monitoring Program, is a really great source of information because they have been updating these maps every 2 years since 1984. So it is a wonderful store of data when you really want to look at how property has changed and really converted from an agricultural use to a non-agricultural use. So the categories up on the map, again, anything green or sort of that lighter yellowish color, even the browns, are really some sort of agricultural category. The darker green is the best category from this perspective, and it's called prime ag land. And the brown, as an example, is a newer category. It's confined to agriculture, but still classified as an agricultural use. The two non-agricultural uses are the darker pink, and then there's a lighter pink on that map. The darker pink is called urban and built-up land. It's exactly where you would expect it to be, right over the city of Reedley. And then that lighter pink color is rural residential. It's probably not coming quite great through on the screen, but there are some little pieces of that light pink sort of scattered along the northern edge of the study area. And that's rural residential. So that's one of those exceptions that you would often see on a map like this. We also wanted to look at land use from the perspective of what is on the ground. So the data that we pulled for this map is based on the assessor data. And the county assessor codes land uses that are on the ground because they use that to tax you at a certain rate. It's not a perfect data set, I'll say, but it is the best data set that we have at this scale for determining existing land uses. And part of the reason we wanted to pull it is because when we start seeing patterns in the maps, this is a useful data set that could explain why we're seeing certain patterns. It's a really big legend, but generally all of the lighter yellow and red and blue categories are related to some sort of urban development. So the lighter yellow categories are generally residential. The red is commercial. Blue is some sort of public facility. The spectrum of the greens really get into some sort of agricultural use, and that really gets down to the crop type level. The assessor is amazingly detailed when they do crop types. I mean, they say peaches, nectarines. We didn't get to that level. We rolled it up to stone fruit. But it still is a good source of data that I think will be helpful as we move through this process. And the final map that we wanted to share tonight, it really talks about trends in land use and in agricultural land that's been converted from agricultural category over to a non-agricultural category. So this map is, again, farmland mapping and monitoring. This is the data set that they update every 2 years, and they've been doing it since the 80s. So we just took a snapshot in time and compared 2000 data to 2016 data. So it's looking at the areas of change from agricultural to non-agricultural over that 16-year period. Again, there's not too many surprises. We see some areas of change, of course, within the city limits as you have grown. We often see some areas of change within spheres of influence. That's not surprising. Even some of the areas that we see outside of the sphere of influence that have converted over, they usually fall into two categories. One is some sort of industrial user, still related to ag production. We see that often. Or areas of rural residential that have slowly converted and sort of tipped the scale from agricultural over to that rural residential category from a mapping perspective under this program. So with that, those are the maps that I had to prepare and present to you this evening. And now I'll pass it back to Georgina.
Great, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sorry for the coughing.
So as Rob mentioned, public outreach is going to be conducted throughout this process. One of the most important things that we can do is reach out to the community to make sure that we have feedback and we've listened to them. We don't want to get to the end of this process and then have this room filled with angry people who haven't heard about this process previously. So we have identified a number of outreach strategies that some of which we have included for the purpose of this workshop. We had electronic sign that you have to the north side of town. We had that referencing tonight's workshop. We also put a notice in the newspaper. We sent out, I don't know how many email invites to stakeholders that would be interested in this farmland preservation program. Calls were made by staff to individuals who might be interested in this, elected officials as well as others. And then, of course, we just word of mouth, we provided throughout the community, letting them know that we were going to be holding this workshop tonight and that it would be to their benefit to attend. As we move forward, the scope of work included three different workshops with you through the Planning Commission, we're recommending that we come to you tonight as well as toward the end of the process, and in between we go out to the public. We go to pop-up events, what are called pop-up events. We go to special events that you may have here in Reedley, and we set up a booth and we talk to the residents and to the farmers where they may be attending an event. We may also go to farming meetings where there might be a number of farmers in the community that might meet. We can go to them and discuss the program with them. Go to Building Industry Association, or at least sit down with the executive director of that association and sit down and talk about what the Reedley Farmland Preservation Program is about and what we intend to move forward with. So there are a number of different outreach strategies that we will be employing as we move forward in this process. We have developed a pretty large stakeholder database already. As I mentioned, we sent out a number of emails inviting people to these workshops, and we'll continue to do that as we move forward. As I mentioned, we will also continue to do the one-on-one coordination. Rob and Ellen have both had calls with the American Farmland Trust, for instance, with the Board of Supervisor who represents this area, to other people at the county and the Ag Commissioner, et cetera, so that we could receive their feedback as well. Some of them couldn't make it here tonight, but they want to be engaged and continue to be engaged in the process. So we'll make sure that that happens. Excuse me. So the next thing that we want to do is get some feedback from you. This is the test for what you've just heard us talk about for the last half hour. And it helps us understand, as a group listening to this presentation, how you feel about the program, what you feel some of the constraints might be, and what you would like to see happen with this program over time. This will be one of our first polling exercises that we do. We intend to do these as well at pop-up events or at presentations that we make around Reedley or stakeholder meetings. So this isn't going to be the only polling exercise that we do. We will also have this on the project webpage. There is a project webpage for this project, and it will be posted there as well. We ultimately might have a survey. We'll just have to see if that's something that we're going to need, depending upon the amount of input that we receive from the general public. So with that, Hector, if you'd like to go ahead and pass out the clickers. This is a clicker exercise. So you can make your choice as many times as you like until we finally hit the next slide, and that will stop that voting process. So if you click one, but you really meant to click two, go ahead and click two, not a problem.
Thank you.
All right.
Now, Georgina assured me that this will not impact our final grade.
That's right. <yeah. laughs>
Why not?
It gives me nerves.
Pardon me? Yeah, you do it. You can do it. Okay, so the first question, does Reedley and the surrounding area look the same as when you were born or moved here? Yes or no? I guess that depends on your age. You only have two?
Missing two.
Maybe everyone click it again. Click it hard.
It reads whenever you click on it.
Right.
No?
I had about nine. I think I only see seven responses.
Just hit that, right?
I'm hitting two. Am I hitting? I'm hitting two. For number two.
Right, number two. Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
And yeah.
You want to hand out some? Are you at nine now?
I'm at eight now.
Okay. So maybe let's do one more time. Click it again hard in the middle of it. And let's see what we get so that we don't miss anybody's vote as we move forward through this process.
There we go.
Okay, there we go. So you need to hit it hard. Okay, next one.
Come on, John.
Go ahead. If yes, so hopefully most of you hit yes, or maybe some of you didn't. Why does it look the same? One, Reedley hasn't grown much. Two, agricultural operations will surround the community. And three, growth has primarily taken place within the city limits or infill. So if it, why does it look the same if you voted yes before? And even if you didn't, why do you think Reedley still maintains that rural character? It hasn't grown much. Agricultural operations still surround the community, and growth has primarily taken place within the infill area.
And if you happen to agree with two or more of the items on there, which one of the three do you think plays the largest part in that? What would be your personal thought on that?
Okay, Hector, where are we at? Okay. Everybody voted? Eight? Okay. All right. Let's just move on. It's all right. So, about 38% is for number one. Reedley hasn't grown much. 38% agricultural operations surround the community, and then about 25% growth was primarily taking place within the city limits. So across the board answer. Okay. If no, how is it different? One, new urban development has occurred at the edges of the city. Two, more urban development has occurred in the downtown area than elsewhere. There is less agricultural land surrounding the city today than there was before, and there is more vacant land within and adjacent to the city. So which of those four is the most, do you feel the most strongly about? So if Reedley doesn't look like it did when you first got here, is it because urban development has occurred at the edges? More urban development has occurred in the downtown area? There's less agricultural land, or there is more vacant land within and adjacent to the city? Are you having fun yet? Where are we at, Hector? Okay. All right, so we can move on. Let's see how this worked out. Okay, so new urban development has occurred at the edges of the city. That's a predominant answer with about 12% for everything else. Okay, that's what we expected. Four, which of the following subgroups best describes you? Are you a private citizen, elected official, planning commission member? So we should have five answers there. farming industry, farmland preservation stakeholder, local, state, or federal agency, development industry, education industry, environmental preservation group, or other? Okay. Okay, so we have our five planning commission members, and then the other largest group is private citizen. So thank you very much for attending tonight. And then we've got other, and the other would be
me.
You're the other?
I could be one or
okay. Okay. Okay, great. That's right, you're the media. Okay, great,
media,
thank
media.
You. Okay, five. Were you aware that the city's general plan update and environmental impact report require development of a farmland preservation program before you heard it tonight? One, yes, two, no.
Let's be honest.
Okay, so most of you said no. It's interesting. And then 29% or so, 25%, yes. Okay, great. So we know we learned something when we leave the room tonight. Six, do you believe that Reedley's economy is impacted by the agricultural operations surrounding it? One, yes. Two, no. Hopefully we might get our first 100% tonight.
Kind of geared that way.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Seven, are you or someone you know involved with Reedley's agricultural community? One, yes. Two, no. Okay, so 89% is yes. That's a pretty hefty percentage. We all know someone in agriculture. Okay, next question. We only have about 10 or 11 questions, I think, so we should be good. Eight, do you believe that there are benefits to preserving farmland for Reedley? One, yes. Two, no. Great, okay, another 100% answer. That's good. Nine, what is most important for you to see in Reedley's farmland preservation program? One, preservation of farmland in key areas. Two, consistency with the Reedley general plan. Or three, to maintain Reedley's fruit basket legacy. Okay, preservation of farmland in key areas. Great. And then the legacy. Good. 10, do you believe that at a minimum, new development should replace farmland that it takes out of production on an acre-for-acre basis or one-to-one ratio basis? One, yes. Two, no. Okay, we're on the right track. That's good. All right, 11. Would you like to receive an update notification or be involved in future workshops related to the development of this program? One yes, two no.
The planning commissioners, even if you vote no, I'm sorry, you're still going to.
You're still obligated.
It says yeah. Would you like.
That's right, that's correct. Not will you be, yeah.
Or would you be available?
Right.
And if you did sign in, that's why it's important to sign in. If you signed in, you will receive email notification the next time we do send out notification of either pop-up events or workshops or even presentations. We'll make sure that you're notified. So 100%, great. 12, are you concerned that too much farmland in the Reedley area may be converted to houses, stores, and other non-agricultural developments? One, very concerned. Two, somewhat concerned. Three, not too concerned. Or four, not concerned at all. Okay, so that's kind of across the board. There's some concern, a little less concern of the majority, but it's about split, half and half, I would say. Okay. Makes sense. How much do you value farms or ranches for their scenic qualities? One, value not at all. Value slightly. Three, value moderately. Or four, value highly. How many more questions do we have, Hector?
15.
Oh, there are 15. Okay. Couple more questions.
Right now.
I lied before. Okay, value moderately, value highly. And that sounds about right. Okay. 14. How much do you value farms or ranches as habitat for wildlife, like pheasants, wild ducks, and other animals? One, value not at all. Value slightly. Three, value moderately. Four, value highly. Okay, so value moderately is the predominant answer here. Slightly and not at all, were also answers. 15, do you feel funding should be prioritized to keep productive farmland from being converted into housing or commercial development? 1, yes, funding should be increased. 2, no, funding should decrease. 3, funding should remain the same. Okay, funding should remain the same. That's the answer we were expecting. So, but there is some agreement to funding should be increased and funding should be decreased. So, but as we start to look at the implementation program, we're going to consider what funding availability there is through grant programs, et cetera, and then, of course, an in-lieu fee to accommodate that one-to-one ratio. Right, so that's it with the exercise. So in terms of next steps, Rob mentioned that there will be next steps associated with this project. The next step in this process will be for us to develop program goals and policies. We'll start working on that tomorrow. We will also develop an implementation program when we start to look at thresholds that may be impacted or may be affected by a ratio of 1-to-1 or some other ratio. How the program should be required, what the requirements for the program might be, what the steps will need to be for the city to take in order to ensure that the program is implemented over time, et cetera. So it'll lay out a complete overview of the program and how it should be implemented. As I mentioned before, we'll continue to conduct public outreach. We'll do the one-on-one coordination with those individuals and stakeholders who are key to this program. We'll make presentations at stakeholder meetings, especially as they relate to agriculture and to development. And we will plan for the next Planning Commission workshop. It'll probably be toward the end of the project when we have a draft plan available for you to review. Get your input on that. And at that point, we will be preparing the administrative draft, and final program for your consideration. So with that, if you have any additional follow-up questions, we'd be more than happy to answer them at this time. And they can be from the public as well. So.
When you're suggesting the 1-to-1 ratio, who is the person that goes out and actually claims that piece of farmland, though? Is it someone that's worth trying to plan something and build something inside the city, or how does that work?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. Typically, the person that's going to come forward is the person that is looking to develop the property. That's where the scenario would then come up, right, where there would be the talks of mitigation. When they enter into the activities to actually then purchase that easement or the fee in lieu, those are all items that would be vetted through this program as we would decide what are those options. That could be something like working directly with the American Farmland Trust and making sure that when the developer comes in that we explain to them we have a partnership with the American Farmland Trust. We line those two up and they begin working with American Farmland Trust, who already has lands and property owners identified that they can utilize in a holding pattern in a bank where they can utilize that. Or it could be the fee in lieu program. If we offer that, then there would be the discussions about how is the land valued and how would the methodology for the fee be set up. All items that will come out of it. So there's a pretty good basket of options available to
different
deal
strategies.
To answer that. So right now I couldn't say, well, we're going to do it exactly this way, all part of what we want to discuss and we're going to talk about over time, what other programs look like, what they use, and the feedback from those staff members and from the people that run the programs to show us, hey, this has been successful, this is well received, these are some lessons learned, these are some of the opportunities and challenges that we see. And Our hope there is really not to reinvent the wheel, but to find the things that have been the most effective and to be able to utilize those same type of things. But that's a great question.
And that's really key. I think what Rob just said is looking at other programs and the experience of those other programs and the strategies that have worked to make sure that we don't start coming up with strategies that are new to the process and haven't been vetted before. So we want to look at what others have done and apply those here where they've made sense and they've been successful without too many issues.
Yeah, thankfully there's some great resources, even like the Fresno County Farm Bureau. I was on the phone with the executive director earlier today and he was talking about his interest in this program. Very excited to see that a local agency is taking this on and has a lot of connections that he wants to be able to help us with there. And we also even have some big names in farming here. For instance, Growen actually entered into the largest land easement in the history of the state of California back in 2012. So, you know, we have farmers that are already very comfortable with this. They understand what it is, they're supportive of the process. So even the outreach with them as one of the major stakeholders to be able to help us understand what they have done, what they have not done, and things that they see are successful and necessary to help continue with ag operations while still balancing the needs of a community that does need to grow and continually provide housing and economic activity. So that's really where that 1-to-1 item came in as well. As you saw in some of the examples there, that there was 4-to-1, 2-to-1, 3-to-1. We elected to begin our discussions with a 1-to-1, and we thought that was the responsible place to start. And it very well might be that the ultimate decision or recommendation that is made moving forward to council is something different. But we elected to start with a 1-to-1 as the starting point for the discussions.
And that was the ag land that I was referring to the north, the Growen property. Right. So any other questions?
Georgina, will we have an opportunity to sign so that we can get notifications?
Oh, yes.
I didn't sign in.
You'll definitely get notification of all of our outreach events. Not a problem. Okay.
Yeah, all the planning commissioners are already on that list, but we always encourage everybody to always sign into the list, just in case, or if you have an alternate email that you wanted to use, something of that nature.
Any other questions?
Or to prove to your spouse that you were here.
Yes, sir.
Those type of important things. Yeah.
Two questions. Clarification on page 12, slide 12.
Chuck, would you mind stepping up to the... to the podium just so we can make sure that we have it recorded. Thank you.
Sorry.
That might help. Okay, two questions on us in reference to line 12, the third bullet point, require a minimum of 1-to-1 mitigation. 1 acre equal to a greater value of farmland is protected for, and this is where I would like some help understanding, for sphere of influence changes and zoning changes, and what does that, can you clarify what that means? I'm seeming to think that it perhaps, if you change the sphere of influence or a zoning, that then there would be, and 1 acre is lost to city development, 1 acre of farmland somewhere will be preserved. And then I have a follow-up question.
Yeah, you're right, Chuck. That's exactly what it'd be. The intent there is whenever the community is growing outside of its current boundary, that is when the mitigation discussion would then begin.
Okay. So my follow-up question is if there is an acre that's lost, into the city limits, then is there, to mitigate that acre could be put in, identified in a farmland trust that's not even in the immediate area. It wouldn't even necessarily affect the immediate perimeter of the city. This could be some farm over on the other side of Carruthers, have you?
Yeah, that it absolutely, and you do see land easements that do happen like that all throughout the state. We haven't identified in the program yet what we want that criteria to be. That's going to be part of the discussion, and we certainly do want as much feedback as we can get there. And again, I think the biggest balance that we want to make sure we're maintaining there is the respect, of course, for the private property rights, but also making sure that the intent, of course, is to be protecting farmland within and as close to your community as possible. So I think that's certainly what staff's intent is looking to be with this. And that's one of the specific questions that we've been asking those that are involved in trusts, in easements, in even fee in lieu, is how exactly did you guys deal with that and what has or has not been successful?
So to comment, if I understand you right, the program would not guarantee in any way the preservation of immediate farmland, immediate adjacent to the city or the immediate surrounding areas.
Well, we're not there yet. Yeah, we're not there yet to be able to say. Yeah, but that's one of the questions we're going to try to see. What are the constraints and the opportunities associated with that, and trying to keep it as close to your community as possible.
At a minimum, I would say we're not going outside of Fresno County.
Yeah. So the goal that we had stated was with the understanding that if it can't be just directly adjacent right around your community, then we wanted to make sure that the policy at bare minimum was required to preserve agricultural land within Fresno County. Yeah, but that very well might be able to pull that item closer and closer in, and all going to be part of the discussions that we'd have. Certainly I would say that's probably one of the top five questions that we've had from day one.
Right.
That we really want to be able to have answered.
Right. You had a question?
I'm familiar with the Williamson Act. This I'm not, so I'm learning. Now, what is the... I'm trying to figure out what the difference is. The Williamson Act has been around for a long time, mm-hmm. and it does essentially the same thing that what this August group here is considering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So can you enlighten me? What are we talking about here? This is a big picture question.
Sure.
Now, I have another big picture question. How closely aligned is this preservation program that you are outlining, and it's been done extremely well, how closely aligned is this to Agenda 21, which is a part of the UN? Thank you.
Yeah. To answer your first question, the difference between a Williamson Act contract would be a private property owner that would enter into a contract where they are preserving themselves, where they have elected to preserve the farmland in exchange for items such as being taxed at a lower rate.
Excuse me for a second.
Sure.
When you say taxed at a lower rate, you're talking about property.
Property taxes, yes. Correct, sir.
Yes. I need to also get that clear. Is the property tax eliminated for somebody that goes into a Williamson Act contract?
No, it's just
reduced.
It's reduced. Yeah,
it's reduced.
Correct. Right. And then for a farmland mitigation program, that one would be driven by development. So if there were a party that were interested in developing a property that were outside of the current city limits, and they were looking to grow that city limit in order to develop, they would then be required to either find a private property owner or to work with some type of trust or easement or potentially a fee program where they would then pay or enter into a contract to protect additional farmland. So the difference between the two is one would be a private property owner seeking to enter into a contract. The other one would be a required mitigation measure taken on by a development entity that was interested in developing land, removing it from an agricultural use to an urban development use.
Right.
Okay. Very similar outcomes, certainly. Just coming at it from two different angles. And to answer your second question, I do not believe that they would be linked in any way, in my opinion.
Great answer. Any other questions? Okay, so probably the next time you hear from us will be by email. We will be letting you know where we're going to be, either at a pop-up event or at a presentation. And we will proceed with development of the remaining tasks toward a draft or an administrative draft program. We'll be back to review that program with you so that you have full knowledge of what the program is all about. And we'll make sure that we, again, invite the public through the strategies that we've identified previously. And we'll continue to engage the public and other strategies. Yes.
Is there time for a comment?
Hmm? Yes. Yes, not a problem.
Yeah, of course.
We're done when you're done.
Okay, so, no problem. Well, you want to be done before that. Just to explain my background, I've been over 45 years career in agriculture as a farming and manager and property owner. And my last position that I retired from is from the University of California as a superintendent of agriculture for the Kearney Research Center out here west of town. I've been keenly interested in the benefits of the approach, the aesthetic benefits of the approach to Reedley being in agriculture. And I would, first of all, I really want to affirm what you're doing here in totality. It's great, and I hope that you are successful in getting the support that this deserves. Secondly, I would very much encourage and would be happy to talk at length sometime in the future about preserving a green belt between Parlier and Reedley. I believe that area along Manning Avenue is under the greatest pressure in our area and has the greatest value of the aesthetic for our community. Reedley and Parlier is going, if nothing happens, it's going to grow together and it's going to be one urban sprawl all the way from Parlier into Reedley if leadership does not step up to the task. What's more, and I believe that this, if the cities of Parlier and Reedley could cooperate instead of compete about who's going to gobble up the most land the first because of pride, wanting to, you know, get more land into sphere of influence. If they cooperate with LAFCO, I could foresee the possibility of getting a green belt, and the value would be very high for that property as compared to other agricultural properties, high in as much as preserving the rural aspect of Reedley. What's more, you have two agricultural research centers, the USDA Research Center and the Kearney, University of California Kearney, which will be threatened by urban development. Why do I say that? Not that somebody's going to try to develop it, but if you put urban development right up against those centers, the research, the field research that they perform will be compromised because of the heat zone and various other aspects. Those are two entities that provide very high paying jobs. Kearney alone has 20 PhDs in residence there. Some of them live here in this community. The workers that work there live in the surrounding communities. The salaries and benefits that they receive are the kinds of jobs that you want for your residents and the money that they bring into the city. So those are valuable, though they're outside the city limit. Those two entities are high value assets for the economic well-being of this community. And if it's allowed to develop, there will be negative impacts to those entities. So for those two reasons, economic and the aesthetic value of having a green belt in between those two cities, that's what I wanted to comment on tonight.
Thank you, Chuck. There's two research, there's two centers there, right?
Correct.
About how many acres do those two encompass?
Kearney has 330 acres. And of course, there's some buildings on that, but laboratories and greenhouse such. And then the USDA is, if I'm correct, it's about 240 acres. Likewise, similar, some structures, but mostly production agriculture and research.
And are they connected to the city limits of Parlier?
Indirectly, they're not in the city limits.
No, but is it connected?
But they have a special agreement to access the city sewer.
Okay.
So it's county property?
Well, it's their own property, right?
Well, it's their...
It's
Well, it's within the county, the sphere of influence. I don't know today where it lies in regards to Parlier. Parlier is pushing, and but now USDA realized that's federal property. Nobody has jurisdiction over federal property except the federal government. So I don't know if that if you have any more questions in that regards. I'd be happy to provide more information, and I could give you, provide even detailed information as to the local economic impact of at least the University of California, Kearney.
And you're retired now from there?
I'm retired. That's why I can speak in front of this microphone.
Right. And you're an ombudsman for them?
Not officially at all. But I see the value there, but
right. No, I think
as an employee, I would not really be able to advocate in front of a public government entity for any kind of action, but I can as a private citizen.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to stay involved?
It looks like it.
This is a good thing.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
And we might want to get those contact names from you just to make sure that they're on our stakeholder
list. They can become part of the email. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think I know we do have several contacts at Kearney already on the list, but we'd love to run them by you and see if there are any additional names. Yeah.
You have some contact names?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we have them on our stakeholder list already, but we don't know if we have the right people, so we might want to run those by you.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, well, we'll see you out in Reedley at the next pop-up event, probably, whatever your next major event is in town. And we'll make sure that you're aware that we're going to be out there with a table and receiving additional input from the public. Thank you so much for this opportunity. We really appreciate
it.
Thank you, Mrs. Vivian, and thank you and your staff.
Thank you.
It was a great presentation.
Thanks to your staff.
Truly enjoyed it and learned a lot.
Yes, hopefully.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're gonna continue our meeting, but the public is welcome to stay if you like. Basically, what we're going to hear is a lot of gossip about what's going on in the city, but you're more than welcome to stay. So with that, the next on our agenda is the director's report.
Boy, I just gossip.
Wow. Go to the other page.
All right. No, I just wanted to give the commissioners updates on some of the projects that are happening around town. We're finally seeing rooftops raising up at Almond Grove. Now that's the one of the maps that was given an extension tonight down on Frankwood. So right now they have two homes actually under construction. Just today they pulled permits for four more, so we will see six actively under construction here in the very near future, and very, very exciting to see. That same developer also has completed the sale for the Monta Vista area that is on Buttonwillow just south of Manning Avenue. If you remember, that was a development that back in 2005, 2006, actually went through a final map process. They had started to build one home there, and then the market absolutely tanked. And the owner of that one defaulted on a lot of items, and the property was left there partially finished with a portion of some of the public improvements done, and had just been a challenge since that time for the city of Reedley to address that and to find a developer that was willing to take on the liability of the items that were already there and to work it through completion. But this local developer here that's been working on the Almond Grove project sat down with us, and we had a lot of conversations over about a year long, and we were able to work out a lot of items, answer many questions together, working with him as the city to try to do everything that we could to make it possible. We know that there's houses needed in the area. We always want to address anything like that. It's a very unique project. It's the only one that we had in the city of Reedley that was left kind of in that half-done state. Many communities, particularly throughout the San Joaquin Valley, when the housing crisis in 2007 happened, there were a good number of developments that were in that state. Thankfully, Reedley just had the one. But that's going to be mitigated soon and will be completed, they're moving forward with that. Council just took action on that to enter into the subdivision improvement agreement with them. at their meeting this past Tuesday. So everything will officially be moving forward with that one now.
Are you talking about the one right across the street from like ECU?
Yes, exactly.
That empty lot with
It looks like the abandoned home that was boarded up. Now it's amazing.
There is you know, I don't want to say sticks, but there's actual electricity or there's plots already, you know, assigned.
They had finaled their or filed for the final map, and that had been recorded. So there were legal lots of record already right there, and then that's when everything fell apart. It's exciting to see them move. I think that the thought process up front was that the home that was there was about maybe 15% done. It was really just sticks on the inside and had been framed and enclosed on the outside, roof and everything. And it looks pretty in pretty bad shape on the outside. About 2 weeks ago, our building official and several people from the building department went inside, and it was sealed up so well that it looks like new construction on the inside. It looks like ongoing new construction. As a result of that, the damage is very, very minimal, and it appears that that building will actually be able to be saved in totality, which is a good thing. We're excited to see that one move forward. And because there's already legal lots of record there, I think that you'll probably see it move much quicker than you may see a development that's going through a mapping process and everything associated with that. So we should be able to see they're already on site doing some of the on-site prep work, but now with the improvement agreement in place, they can actually get into the place where they're doing the encroachment permits and interfacing with the road and start really doing curb cuts and you know, street work and all of the fun stuff. For Rancho Vista, that is the project Buttonwillow and Duff. They are continually working on their public improvement plans right now. They're detailing with some of the issues that had to do with the storm drain and with the sewer. They've been working hard on those items as far as the engineering for their public improvements. They're finishing that up. Then for Frankwood and South, that one is still going through the LAFCO process as far as annexation. Because that one was outside of the sphere of influence, it takes a little bit longer because there's an additional review called the Municipal Service Review that takes place by LAFCO, and so they're currently about halfway through that as well. The UHC on Manning and Buttonwillow is moving along. I'm sure you guys could see a lot of their exterior now is up. They were just putting up signage, and they're doing a lot of their on-site improvements. They're raising their solar structures right now that cover their parking lot. So good things happening there. And I wanted to point out that in the coming months, we will be coming back to the Planning Commission to have discussions about the Reedley Parkway. So Reedley, as you guys know, has this beautiful parkway that bisects right through the center of the community. It's a wonderful amenity. We get questions fairly often from elected officials and members of the public of what now? So it goes from one end of the community to the next, right through the middle. Is it ever going to circle back around? Is it going to go north? Is it going to go south? And those were conversations that were touched on lightly within the general plan, but never to the point where it had looked at, what about this alignment? What about that alignment? What are the opportunities and constraints about that? And we'd been given direction from the council in the last couple months to start broaching into those conversations now. Almost right in lockstep with that, we had someone that is from the Valley that I know well and worked in the Valley and is doing their master's program in city and regional planning at the University of Oregon right now and had reached out and said that they were looking for a project that they could do for their master's program and were curious to know if we had anything. And so I immediately threw that one out and said, we would love to be able to do this. So we're going to start coming back with discussions about the potential for a master plan for the Reedley Parkway and what that might look like. Up to this point, there's just references to the Reedley Parkway in all of the documents. The general plan used to be in the specific plan. It's in the bike and ped mobility plan. Obviously, there's reference to it there. But now we're talking about a master plan and talking about what a phase, an additional phase to the north and potentially even down around to the south to really circle all the way around the community, what that might look like. It's really far off right now, very preliminary discussions that we're entered into, but I wanted the commission to know that in the coming months that you will likely see something coming before you where we're looking for direction and an ultimate recommendation to take to the city council to see if that's something that they would want to then adopt into the general plan, into the circulation element, and then potentially start looking for funding sources to actually build items.
That isn't Mr. Rodriguez, is it? the gentleman you're speaking
to? It's not. No.
It's not?
Okay. No. Jenna Chilingarian is her name. She used to work at Fresno State. And then, was taken on her master's program. But she'll be coming back to the Valley here. She has strong ties in the Valley. I think she's going to be a great benefit to the planning community within the Fresno region. That said, those are all of the updates that I had for the Planning Commission this time. Any questions or anything else you guys were looking to get information on or gossip?
Yeah, that's pretty mild gossip.
Can you write her name down right
yeah,
here?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're working on,
yep.
on that. I have a couple of questions, just to refresh my memory. The project where Royal Valley was, that's going to be used for parking for the city of Reedley and the PD, is that correct?
That is correct.
And we're going to have solar panels on there as well, too?
Yep, so the Royal Valley building did have solar panels on top of it, and then those panels were taken down simply to remove the building. That was because of the age and the structural integrity of the building. It was being used for parking and storage, so we'll have similar facilities that will be there, but everything will be on ground-mounted solar, and we're actually enhancing the amount of solar that we're going to have there. And they're also adding EV charging stations for both City Hall and for community use as well as part of that project.
Awesome. And thank you for hitting on a master plan for the parkway, because that same question you're talking about, we have got a lot of questions regarding that as well.
Good.
And the only answer we had is we know that it was included in a general plan just superficially. Mm. But anyhow, the other thing, too, is exactly which block is singled out for the library. Is it this one here or the next one?
It's just off of 10th, in between 10th and 13th.
10th and 13th. Mm-hmm.
So right across the street from Kings Canyon Unified, from their educational building, if you were to stand right at the entrance and look right across the street, it's that empty lot right there.
Okay. Across the street.
Yep, just off of the parkway, west of the parkway. So, yeah, the preliminary designs, the good thing about that is that while it's the county and the county that takes care of everything, as far as the building and whatnot, we have been very, very engaged with them, and they are interested in making sure that we are there for the architecture, that we're there, we're happy with the design, what type of amenities we want to see in it. They recently came back and let us know as well that the dollars that they have allocated, that the Board of Supervisors have already allocated to that project, are going to cover almost the entirety of the cost, whereas before they had said maybe 50%, and the community would need to come up with the rest. The Board of Supervisors, because of the work that we had put in with them to work on the land, donate the land, and everything of that nature, really, really felt that they could allocate more to that, and they showed that support by doing so.
Does that butt up to Martin Chevrolet?
It would be on the other side of the tracks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions for staff? Do we want to discuss the agenda items?
Yeah, sure. So as you can see, we do not anticipate any other meetings for the rest of the year for Planning Commission. The regular meetings on December 5th and 19th, we don't have any items, as well as in January 2nd for sure, potentially the 16th, but at this time we don't have any agenda items for the rest of the year.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, that's Merry Christmas. That's Christmas gift to you all, yeah.
Okay, anybody else have any concerns or questions for staff?
No.
Thank you, Ellen, for the dinner.
This meeting is now adjourned.
Thank you, commissioners.